gentlemen, the Minnesota Senate Energy, Utilities, Environment, and Climate Committee will please come to order. It is Monday, April 7th, 2025, 12:30 p.m., and we are here in Minnesota Senate Building, Room 1150, and a quorum is present. Thank you for your patience. Today's agenda features one bill, Senate File 2393. That's the chair's bill, and serving as the energy omnibus for the Senate position. Members, here's our plan today. We'll have the fiscal and walkthrough from here. Then I'm going to hand the gavel over to Senator Klein. I'll go to the testifiers table, and we'll have our testifiers testify. It is the intention to lay this bill over until Wednesday, when we will mark it up, vote it out. And so with that, we have a list of testifiers who'd asked to appear. We're asking them to keep their testimony to 2 minutes, please. I do have someone up here with a stopwatch. They'll be courteous, polite, and respectful, and will not make a fuss until about 2 minutes and 5 seconds, and you'll probably hear something from Senator Klein. With that, Senate File 2393, and there is an A3 amendment. This is a delete all, and what I'd like to do is have staff do a little bit of a walkthrough. Ms. Severson, do you want to go first, or Mr. Mueller? Mr. Mueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be working first off the spreadsheet and just noting that the changes that the bill has versus the base budget. The spreadsheet shows the Department of Commerce, the PUC, and the Climate Innovative Financing Authority budget. There's another part of the spreadsheet on page 5 that shows the renewable development, or on page 4 of the handout shows the renewable development account, and that's in Article 2 of the bill. Working off the spreadsheet, the last two sets of columns, you'll see Senate File 2393, Senate budget, and that column Senate minus Feb is sort of the changes that you'll see versus the February forecast. Lines 6 through 37 show all the general fund direct appropriations that are in the bill. I'll note on line 15, the pre-weatherization and workforce training, what used to show up as a direct appropriation is now in the transfer section. And that is the one general fund item that has a change item. Another change item that is in the bill but is not a general fund item, you'll note on line 40, the extraordinary events bonds from Senate File 999. There is a cost to the Department of Commerce and to PUC. Line 40 shows the cost to the Department of Commerce. This is being carried in the special revenue fund, and there's a assessment language that allows them to assess for these costs. Now, this is only an event that they actually go through with the program. The original bill had this as a general fund appropriation, but now it's been changed to have a cost go through the special revenue fund and then giving the department authority to assess for those costs. Line 49 is the change item for the Petroleum Tank Release Compensation Board that was in the governor's budget. That is a $500,000 per year increase to the Petro Board that was in the governor's budget. Going on to, so the total changes, the change for the extraordinary event bonds shows up as a special revenue fund change on line 67. On the next page, other than that, everything is base budget in the department. Public Utilities Commission, this again reflects the changes that were proposed by the governor. They were on lines 92 through 97 are the change items. Lines 93 through 96 were in the governor's budget. There was on line 93 an operating adjustment. On line 94 was a technology and maintenance and innovation increase. Line 95, a tribal liaison. And then line 96, natural gas utility planning and coordination. Together, those four items have a general fund cost of about, you'll see on line 84, it goes just up to their operating cost of $3.8 million for the '26-'27 biennium and a little over $4 million in the out years. All these costs, increased costs, are assessed back to the general fund through the utilities, so it nets out as zero versus the general fund target. The other item I'll note on line 97 is there's also a cost to the PUC for the extraordinary bonds. And again, that will be running through the special revenue fund, and they only can assess the cost, actual costs for that, and then we'll have the assessment authority back. On line 102 is the Climate Innovative Finance Authority. I'm just, this spreadsheet just shows their base funding. There's not an appropriation in the bill. They get their operating expense through the Climate and Economic Development Fund, and there's a statutory appropriation in that fund to fund the Climate Innovative Finance Authority. So there's nothing in the bill, but I just wanted to make sure it shows on the spreadsheet just because it has a total cost for this budget area. The last thing I want to show is on page 3, and this is where the pre-weatherization and workforce training has been moved down to a transfer. It's now at $1.199 million per year. The base budget was $3.199 million per year, so it's a reduction of $2 million per year from the general fund, and that's a net savings versus the base of $4 million in fiscal year 26-27 and $4 million in the tails, which was the target, which was the general fund target for this committee. And you'll see that down on line 154. So the only general fund change that affects the target is that reduction to the pre-weatherization and workforce training amount, and that was a leftover. There was a base appropriation left over from 2023 when some one-time money, it was about $38 million of one-time money was appropriated in the last budget cycle. And then this was an ongoing appropriation that was left over from that, but is now being reduced in this bill. Next, I'll go to page 4 of the spreadsheet. These are the items that are funded out of the renewable development account. First, I'll note on line 3, you'll see there's interest income and adjustments. You'll see in bold there a negative 8.831. This reflects a forecast adjustment to the RDA that was in the February forecast. The Department of Management and Budget made a adjustment to the interest income to account for some wrongly calculated interest income over the last few years, and this results in about a $13 million reduction overall to the RDA that now is being carried over into fiscal year 26. So that reduces the amount of money in the fund. What this proposal is showing is a $20 million increase in spending to the Renewable Development Fund over what was in the base. There are a few items that were in the base, line 15, a $100,000 per year appropriation to Commerce for Made in Minnesota Solar. That was in the base. The new items start on line 16. It's a $1.2 million for the University of St. Thomas Microgrid. That number is $400,000 that was in the base plus $800,000. The next item is the Green Hydrogen Project, Senate File 1713. At $2 million, the anaerobic digester at Senate File 1037 at $4 million, the Komazoo Geothermal Energy System at $2.2 million, and the Minnesota Energy Alley at $1 million. All the lines you see, like 22 through 38, were all the projects that were funded in the previous biennium. So the new ones are in that center column. Next, we go up page 5. The first line 44, State Building Energy Revolving Loan Fund, that's in the base, $92,000 per year. The new item you'll see on line 48, the Green Ammonia Research at $5 million. That goes to the University of Minnesota. And then to the Pollution Control Agency is the Emerald Ash Borer Disposal, and that's at $3 million. There's one other item on line 93 that is being handled as a transfer. And this is to the geothermal planning program, Senate File 2454, and that's a $2 million transfer. So all those changes net out to $20 million of increased spending and transfers, leaving a balance on line 106 of just over $2 million in fiscal year 26 to the RDA. And that is it for the spreadsheet. If there's not any questions, I can start going through some of the language in Article 1 and Article 2.
Members, any questions for Mr. Mueller before we press on? Seeing none, Mr. Mueller.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll just point out a couple things in going to the A3DE amendment. Article 1 contains all the appropriations. I'm not going to go through all of them because they're also in the spreadsheet. I just will note a couple of language items. Going to Article 2 is the renewable development account. Again, it lists all the appropriations that I just listed in the bill. There's a couple things I want to point out dealing with grant administration. On page 7, subdivision 8, up on line 6, this is the amount of grant administration costs that the Department of Commerce can use to administer all the grants in from the RDA, and it's instead of a percentage, it's at $100,000. And then similar for the Pollution Control Agency, on the bottom of page 7 onto top of 8, to administer the grant for the biomass system in the Shakopee using the waste heat, $25,000 to administer that grant program. Then on Section 7, there is an extension for a previous appropriation to the St. Thomas Microgrid Center that is extending that appropriation from the previous biennium out to 2028. And then the one policy section in this article came from Senate File 2454 dealing with the geothermal planning system, and just makes tribal governments also allow as a recipient for those grants. And that's all I have for Article 1 and 2. I'll turn it over to Ms. Severson for Article 3.
Thank you, Mr. Mueller. Members, let's have Ms. Severson do the walkthrough, and then if we have member questions, then we'll start our testimony. Ms. Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll do a brief walkthrough of Article 3, the energy policy portion of the omnibus bill. Starting with Section 1, we have language from Senator Frentz's Senate File 2393 as introduced. This language makes a technical change to reflect changes made last session. Section 2 is language from Senator Matthews' Senate File 1393 as amended in committee. This section explains when environmental review can be considered complete in regards to residential, commercial, warehousing, and light industrial development projects. Sections 3 and 4 are also from Senate File 1393 and defines emergency backup generator and data center. Sections 5 and 6 is language from Senator Rarick's Senate File 1142. This language reflects the language discussed in committee, but now includes a grandfather clause, which states the changes being made in Section 6 only apply to qualifying facilities that begin operations after June 30th, 2025. Qualifying facilities that began operation before that date are subject to Section 216B.164, which is a section of law on cogeneration and small power production. Section 7 is language from Senator Frentz's Senate File 2855, sunsetting the Community Solar Garden Program. Section 8 is Senator Matthews' Senate File 426, which amends the definition of eligible energy technology to allow hydroelectric power of any capacity to be considered an eligible energy technology. Section 9 is language from Senator Weber's Senate File 2018, which amends the carbon-free standard to include electricity generated by a peaking facility that uses only biodiesel fuel for the first 400 hours of each year. Section 10 is language from Senator Hoffman's Senate File 1455, amending the definition of large energy facility to include a facility capable of storing more than 1 million gallons of liquefied natural gas or synthetic gas, which is an increase from the previous standard of 100,000 gallons. Section 11 is language from Senator Matthews' Senate File 1393, which provides an exemption for a combination of energy backup generators at a single site with a combined capacity of 50,000 kilowatts from the certificate of need requirement if it's eligible for permitting as a single stationary source under Minnesota rules. Sections 12 to 17 are the remaining sections from Senator Frentz's Senate File 2393. These sections make several technical and conforming changes. Sections 18 to 20 are the last sections from Senator Matthews' Senate File 1393. Section 18 adds a definition of emergency backup generator to Section 216I.02. Section 19 allows an applicant for a combination of emergency backup generators to follow the standard review procedures in Section 216I.07. Section 20 requires an environmental assessment to include a discussion of reasonable alternatives to certain proposed projects. And then for Article 4, I'll pass it back to Mr. Mueller.
Mr. Mueller.
Mr. Chairman, we will finish off here on Article 4. This deals with the extraordinary bonds for the natural gas utilities coming from Senate File 999. This is as it was amended in committee and then laid over with two changes. One is the language that was having the Department of Management and Budget review the bonds. That language has been taken out. And then I will go to the last page of the bill language where the new assessment has been inserted. That starts on page 42, section 10. That's a technical change to allow the new change on section 11 happen. And this would basically say the PUC and the Department of Commerce can assess for anticipated costs and then make follow-up assessments for actual costs for when and if this program is ever needed. And this money would be deposited into a new account in the special revenue fund, and then they have the appropriation that comes from that fund. So this would only happen if there are actual costs or anticipated costs. And so that's new language, allowing it to happen without a general fund appropriation. And that is it, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Mueller. Thanks, Ms. Severson. Well done. Members, let's do this. First, let's put the A3 amendment on. Discussion to the A3. All in favor of adopting the A3, say aye. Aye. All opposed, say nay. The motion prevails. The A3 amendment is adopted. Members, questions for Mr. Mueller or Ms. Severson on Senate File 2393 walkthrough as amended? Otherwise, I'm going to go up to the testifiers table, make a few comments, and we'll get started with Senator Klein at the gavel. Member Senator Klein.
Chair, question for you, actually. I thought the flat dollar amount appropriation for administration of grants as opposed to a percentage amount was novel and pretty smart. I'm just curious to be more informed about that. Have other committees done that? Is that a habit that we should adopt here at the Senate? How did you come to your dollar amount?
Thank you, Senator Klein. For those that follow the ongoing discussions about grant administration, this is the amount that the agency is allowed to take from the total amount granted. To your question, I hate to be too complicated, but it was on recommendation of SCRFA that we consider it. And the set dollar amounts are there, like the rest of the bill, to be discussed, debated. But I kind of like it. And Mr. Chair, I know you chair the Commerce Committee. It's a conversation that will probably continue. So that's my answer, Senator Klein. With that, Senator Klein's going to take the gavel. I'm going to go to the, Senator Grunhagen.
Just one quick question. On Article 3, page 9, it's a solar energy production incentive program. Beginning in 2625, a $5 million. How does that program work? So is that, if somebody could shed some light on that?
We sure can. Senator Grunhagen, I'm going to go to Mr. Mueller for those adjustments.
Mr. Chairman, the language on page 9, the dollar amounts and everything there, that's all existing law. The only thing that's being amended on page 9 is a technical correction down on line 31. Otherwise, everything that else is on that page is already current law.
So, Mr. Chair?
Senator Grunhagen.
So how does the program work again? How would that $5 million? My question isn't that I see that it's existing law. It's just that how does that apply? Like if somebody wants to build solar, they can apply for so much credit, or how does that work?
Mr. Mueller.
Mr. Chairman, this is the program that Xcel runs, and this is just saying that they allocate, there's a certain amount of dollars that they can sort of sign up each year for this program. And last year's energy bill on line 27 added that $5 million each year going out through 2035. So that was an addition last year. This bill doesn't change any of that. It just does a technical correction. But as far as the mechanics of the existing program, I'm not an expert on that one. I know this is just sets up the program that Xcel runs, not the other program that goes through the state.
Senator Grunhagen, I'll go back to you for your next question or comment. But essentially last year we added additional money to the program. The administration and the goals of the program have not changed. Senator Grunhagen.
Yeah, just who receives the money then? People who do production of, it's an energy production incentive for solar? So who's receiving it? Companies that produce solar?
Senator Grunhagen, I have a laundry list of who's who of solar advocates right here in this room. Any one of them would be happy to talk to you about it. We can talk offline first. I hate to go off script, but is there someone from Mencia who wants to run up and take Senator Grunhagen's question real quick before we get back on schedule with the regular printed agenda? Mr. O'Grady.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. For the record, Logan O'Grady, Executive Director of the Minnesota Solar Energy Industries Association. Thrilled to be here. To answer your question, Senator Grunhagen, this is the Solar Rewards Program, I believe, and I think someone from Xcel is here and could answer this probably better than I could. But what it does is it uses money from the Renewable Development Account to pay out on the form of bill credits to solar system owners. So if you have solar on your rooftop, you get credited each month based on the production that your solar system has, and that is how it's paid out, is through the Renewable Development Account.
Thanks, Mr. O'Grady. Senator Grunhagen, you're good. Members, other questions? All right, with that, I'm going to hand the gavel over to Senator Klein to present the bill.
Senator Ferentz, welcome to your committee. Senate File 2393 is in front of us as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. Proud to present Senate File 2393, the Senate Energy Omnibus Bill. Just a few comments for all of you. We have worked in a bipartisan fashion in this committee since the start of the 2023 session. We have passed bipartisan legislation, and the bill in front of you represents bipartisanship. I think that is a virtue. I think that signals Minnesotans that both parties have had a say, and that the inclusion in these provisions, including things like net metering or the data center provisions, is a sign that we will work across the aisle on energy. The reason I think that's important, members, is that I think Minnesotans are asking us to take a bipartisan approach, and when it is bipartisan, those are the bills that tend to stick. Those are the ones that signal to the public that we have support from across the state. A few highlights of the bill, and then looking forward to the testimony. The 100% clean energy by 2040 bill is a signature achievement of this committee. It says our energy will be clean by 2040. In order to do this, we have to continue to have competition on price and reliability. There are provisions of the bill before you that do that. I'm asking you to consider, what is the way to reduce carbon emissions the most and the fastest? For my friends in the DFL, if we're going to run around saying that we're for lowering carbon emissions, we better support things that actually do that in the short term. I'm including in that Senator Weber's B100 bill, which seems to me obviously to reduce carbon emissions when compared to the alternatives. If we're for lowering carbon emissions, that should be a yes vote. In the same way, I'm asking you to consider sunsetting the Community Solar Garden program. I think that it is a successful program in introducing the solar marketplace to Minnesota, and has led to a vibrant solar market that competes effectively in many ways. However, the current program, the LMI program, still creates a burden of cost on ratepayers And I'm struck again, members, by the ratepayers who are paying this, the 1.4 million less the 29,000, who are largely unaware that this burden has been put on them by this program. I am as much in favor of building clean energy as any member of this committee, and I am telling you that to make these kinds of choices will build more clean energy, it will build it sooner, and it will build it for less money. And I encourage members of the committee to look at the bill that way. A couple thoughts on the individual policy provisions. Data centers. I have talked to Senator Matthews about this over and over again. The language in the bill in front of you is incomplete on data centers. However, we agreed eventually to send it to the Environment Committee. I appreciated that, and the Environment Committee will be taking it up tomorrow. Meanwhile, this language is going in the Senate omnibus bill today and hopefully to be passed out of this committee on Wednesday. I know there's more work to do on it, but we're saying this is work that should be done this year by the state of Minnesota, and we remain open to suggestions. That's why the data center language is in here. On net metering, one of our principles on the 100% bill is that we would bring the entire state with us, metro, suburban, rural. MREA is asking for us to take a look at net metering. That's one of our stakeholders. It's not the only stakeholder, but it's one of them. And the provisions of Senator Rarick's net metering bill in here are an attempt to say the same thing. Let's build clean energy, but perhaps we can build it for less. And that is the inclusion there. Large hydro. We have often asked, if this is a clean energy bill, why is there an artificial designation of 100 megawatts of large hydro? I will tell you, this was originally Senator Eichhorn's provision. He and I discussed it. I'm not sold on it as a be-all and end-all, and if we have discussions, stakeholders are invited to speak to that issue in particular. I'm open to talking about removing it this week or as it moves forward. Senator Hoffman has his storage bill. I have not heard any objection to that bill. That is the change of the storage limit from 100,000 to a million. If there are objections to that, I'm guessing that we'll hear them here. And then Senator Zhang, who is available online here, has the securitization bill. This simply attempts to provide a mechanism for a natural gas utility to protect ratepayers in the event there's an extraordinary event. And having been through that, I would offer you, members, that if there's objections to securitization, we have not had them brought forward in any force at this point. All right, I'll just leave the RDA proposals, Mr. Chair, to speak for themselves, but I do want to flag for everybody here, including the men and women behind me. We consider RDA appropriations a competition. What is the best, strongest proposal for an RDA use that's within the guidelines that were given? And these are the projects and these are the dollar amounts that I thought best fit the spirit and the letter of RDA. Many quality RDA projects were brought to this committee that are not included in the omnibus. That is because it's not enough to be a great project. It has to compete favorably with the limited resources we have in the RDA account. As you've heard from Mr. Mueller, that amount is actually slightly smaller. But the RDA proposals in here are the ones that we felt best reflect the meaning of our goals: clean, affordable, and reliable. And with that, Mr. Chair, and understanding that we're going to lay the bill over, I'd be happy to listen to the testifiers.
Thank you, Chair Frantz. Your hard work and passion really show through. Testifiers, we have 18 of you. I'm going to bring you up two at a time. Ask you to keep your comments to 2 minutes. At about 2 minutes, you'll see me doing this, and that means it's time to move along. Starting with Commissioner Arnold and Mr. Kent Sulem, please. Commissioner, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
All right. Thank you, Chair Klein, Chair Frantz, committee members. I'm Grace Arnold. I'm the commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Commerce. I'm really pleased to be here today to testify on Senate File 2393. Really appreciate the work of the committee in vetting both the budget and policy items that have come together in this omnibus package. The department recognizes the hard budgetary choices that need to be made. And we really appreciate the investment in the Petro Fund, and while unfortunate, understand the proposal as recommended by the governor to reduce the ongoing general fund appropriation to the pre-weatherization dollars that were authorized a couple of years ago. The department strongly opposed any change to our ability to recover costs from to administer legislatively directed pass-through grants. As we've previously reported to this committee, we effectively oversee these grants with about 5% or under of the funding, typically far less, dedicated to administration. We've heard loud and clear from legislators that we need to be diligent when reviewing the use of state grant dollars, and arbitrarily capping administration of funding is at odds with this request. On the bill's policy provisions, we thank you for the adoption of the department's policy changes in our budget bill. We also appreciate this bill's critical first step toward policy that balances the economic development opportunity data centers may present with the need for thoughtful environmental review. We do, however, oppose the sunset of the low and moderate income community solar garden program. The change is both premature and would jeopardize the $62 million in federal funding that we've received for the Solar for All program. We also continue to oppose the net metering changes as proposed. We're happy to continue conversations. As this committee takes the steps to allow the expansion of hyperscaler data centers into Minnesota, we believe that now is not the time to take the options off the table for the development of new renewable energy production. Finally, we hope the Senate will continue, will reconsider the changes that redefine biofuels for use in peaking facilities as carbon-free. That's a question that's currently posed in front of the Public Utilities Commission and requires some complicated analysis through a life cycle analysis, and that's the appropriate place for that question to live. Thank you, Senator Frenz, Chair Frenz, and the Energy Committee for all your work. I know this is a ton, so good to get here to the omnibus bill, and appreciate the time. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Can you please make room for Willie Rahr? Mr. Sulem, please introduce yourself and proceed.
Chair Klein, Chair Frenz, members of the committee, I'm Ken Sulem, Director of Government Relations and Senior Counsel for the Minnesota Municipal Utilities Association, MMUA. I'm here today to express our deep gratitude for the inclusion of Senator Rarick's Senate File 1142 on net metering in Article 3, Section 5 of the Omnibus Bill. Net metering is a very important issue for our members, and language included in the Energy Omnibus Bill will ensure a more equitable program. While MMUA has no objection to the other provisions of the Omnibus Bill, we would strongly encourage you to consider adopting Senate File 2170, Senator Farnsworth's biomass bill, as an amendment on Wednesday. Thank you for giving us an opportunity to share today, as well as to raise our issues throughout the entire year that this committee has been having hearings. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Sulem. Can you please make room for Tracy Hodel? Mr. Rahr, please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Frenz, members of the Senate Energy Committee. My name is Willie Rahr. I am chairman and, president and CEO of Rahr Corporation. I'm here today to express my sincere gratitude for your support of Senator Pratt's Emerald Ash Borer Disposal Bill. This forward-thinking and vital legislation presents a proactive and sustainable approach to addressing the ongoing crisis caused by the emerald ash borer infestation. By supporting the establishment of a dedicated EAB waste wood disposal and processing facility in the West Metro, this investment will have significant and lasting impacts. The funding allocated for this facility is a step in the right direction, ensuring that we're addressing the emerald ash borer crisis in a thoughtful and sustainable way. It not only protects our environment, but also supports the economic well-being of our communities. We're deeply grateful for the community's leadership and foresight in supporting this essential initiative. Thank you once again, and we look forward to working with you as the bill progresses.
Well, thank you, Mr. Rahr. Can you please make room for Jenny Glumack? Ms. Hodel, please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Tracy Hodel. I'm Public Services Director for the City of St. Cloud. I am the project manager for the city's exciting green hydrogen project. So first and foremost, I just want to thank this committee, Senator Frenz, for all your work on this bill. We're very excited to be included within this Senate Energy Bill. This project is truly groundbreaking. It is first of its kind in the world and will spear hydrogen development and use within the state of Minnesota. It will bring energy costs down. It will also bring manufacturing jobs. It will revolutionize the transportation sector, and we already have a significant amount of project partners within this green hydrogen project, especially in the manufacturing and the transportation sector for this. So thank you so much for including this. I do want to point out that $2 million of the $3.5 million is awesome, and we Thank you. And that will cover the costs associated with the equipment part of this project, but it will not cover the installation costs. So something just for this committee to keep in mind as this bill progresses, as we'll likely have to look for some additional funding for that funding gap. But again, thank you so much for including this into the bill at this stage, and look forward to continuing to work together as this progresses, and for everybody's work on this bill. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Ms. Hodel. Can you please make room for Annie Levinson-Falk? Ms. Glumek, please introduce yourself.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Jenny Glumek, Director of Government Affairs for the Minnesota Rural Electric Association. We are the statewide association representing the 50 not-for-profit electric co-ops who provide power to 1.7 million member owners. MREA appreciates the opportunity to testify in support of Senate File 2393. Thank you, Chair Friends, very much for including Senator Rarick's bipartisan net metering provisions. Minnesota's electric cooperatives are member-driven and have a responsibility to provide safe, reliable, and affordable electricity while ensuring fairness amongst all members. The current net metering law is outdated, inequitable, and expensive. Minnesota is the only state that allows individuals to install oversized solar arrays that produce excess energy for profit in cooperative territory. Current net metering rules allow members to install systems beyond their actual needs, exporting large amounts of excess energy to the grid at a rate far beyond the market excess energy to the would dictate. This shifts costs onto our members without solar, many of whom cannot afford it or lack the option to install it. This is neither fair nor sustainable. There have been many misconceptions as to what this bill does. The language in this bill enables homeowners to still receive retail credit for solar energy they use to offset their own energy consumption. Only excess power beyond what they need would be compensated at market rates, aligning with the original purpose of net metering. This prevents large, oversized solar systems from being used to generate profits at the expense of other customers. Again, thank you so much, Senator Friends and Senator Rarick, for your help with these provisions. I'd also like to thank Mencia and others and policymakers for having these conversations with us, and we hope they continue. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Glumek. Can you please make room for Noelle Sarizan? Ms. Levinson-Falk, please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Chair Frantz, and members. I'm Annie Levinson-Falk, Executive Director of the Citizens Utility Board of Minnesota, a nonprofit advocate for residential utility consumers. And I want to testify today to flag for members two ratepayer protection items that we're hopeful could be included in this bill as it moves forward. The first is a technical change to ensure that utility low-income programs can continue to operate even if programs change at the federal level. Minnesota's investor-owned utilities operate affordability programs for qualified low-income households, and under state statute, a household is eligible for these programs if they receive federal energy assistance. Because of that, if federal energy assistance is cut or eliminated, it would put Minnesota's utility programs at risk. Similarly, eligibility for low-income conservation programs under the ECO Act is partly tied to partly determined using data that's published by the U.S. Housing and Urban Development, or HUD. And if HUD were to stop publishing that data, or even if it moved to a different federal agency, it would harm the utility low-income conservation programs. So we've worked with the Department of Commerce, program administrators, and the utilities to develop a technical fix to this issue, which we hope can be included in this bill. And I apologize for not raising this earlier in session and kind of bringing something last minute, but it was triggered by federal changes affecting the energy assistance program last week. The second item relates to data centers. Members are well aware of the enormous new electrical demand that's coming from the growth in large data centers. Everyone agrees that data center companies should bear the full cost of providing that electricity. And I testified in this committee early in session about the kinds of actions that would help to ensure that ratepayers are protected from cost shifts as infrastructure is built to serve data center customers. On this topic, too, we've worked with other parties to develop legislative language to protect ratepayers, and we hope it may be included in this bill. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak, and I'd be happy to answer questions at the appropriate time.
Thank you, Ms. Levinson-Falk. Senator Frenz has a response. Can you please make room for Aurora Voltron? Senator Frenz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Levinson-Falk. I'd encourage you to provide the technical language to Mr. Klein. That's something that sounds like we could work in at the next stop, so happy to have that, and appreciate the teamwork. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Sarisen, please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thanks,
I'd like to thank the chair and the committee for allowing me to testify for you today. My name is Noelle Sarisen. I serve as the political manager at MN350 Action, a climate justice organization committed to advocating for a sustainable, just future for all Minnesotans. We also played a key role in advancing the 100% clean energy bill through the legislature. I'm here today to express our significant concerns with Senate File 2393. This bill includes several provisions rather than address climate change, could perpetuate harmful practices and disproportionately impact frontline communities. These provisions include, but are not limited to, the inclusion of B100 biodiesel as a carbon-free fuel for peaker plants and sunsetting the community solar garden program. The term carbon-free is defined as any technology that generates electricity without emitting carbon dioxide, as outlined on lines 14.19 and 14.20 through the bill. But this definition does not let biodiesel qualify. Research shows biodiesel not only emits carbon, but also more nitrous oxide than regular diesel, contributing to air pollution, smog formation, and subsequent health problems for surrounding communities. Furthermore, the demand for crops needed to produce biodiesel has led to a decline in small and medium-sized farms, disproportionately affecting non-traditional farmers, including Black, Indigenous, and Asian communities. A more equitable and effective solution to our energy needs lies in programs like the Community Solar Garden. Nearly 30% of Minnesotans are renters. The Community Solar Garden offers them, as well as those who cannot afford solar panels, a pathway to access clean, renewable energy. This program is vital for a just transition, ensuring vulnerable communities are not left behind in the face of rising energy costs tied to fossil fuels, especially right now with the current trade rules around foreign fuels. Unfortunately, this bill proposes to eliminate the program before it has a chance to sufficiently demonstrate its benefits. I urge the committee to refrain from undermining the process made by the 100% clean energy bill by introducing false climate solutions and cutting critical programs that facilitate a just transition to clean energy. I strongly encourage the inclusion of necessary amendments for these and other provisions, or I respectfully ask to vote against the bill as currently drafted. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sarisen. Can you please make room for Sarah Waff? Ms. Votrin, please introduce yourself and go ahead.
Chair Klein, members of the committee, my name is Aurora Votrin, and I'm the legislative director for 100%. Thank you for the opportunity today to weigh in on Senate File 2393. First, we do not support creating carve-outs to the carbon-free energy standard. We continue to support the design of the original law, which is technology neutral, and task the Public Utilities Commission with determining criteria and standards for enforcement. As the committee is well aware, this process is ongoing in PUC Docket 23151. We trust that the PUC's final orders will provide guidance on how to evaluate the fuels used and energy generated in all regulated facilities, including peaking facilities. Changes to the law prior to those orders are premature, and in the case that they are necessary, any changes must go through the same robust stakeholder engagement process that was central to the law's original passage. Second, we strongly oppose the bill's current plan to exempt data centers from obtaining a certificate of need for their backup generation. There have been constructive and ongoing conversations with stakeholders about how to mitigate the impacts of large-scale data centers on greenhouse gas emissions, utility efficiency programs, and host communities. Without assurances on these issues, we do not believe it is reasonable to provide a wholesale exemption for what could be very large, potentially 600 megawatt or larger, energy-generating facilities. And finally, we do support the $2 million investment in the geothermal planning grant program and the $2.2 million investment in the geothermal system at the Como Zoo. We look forward to continuing conversations on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Votrin. Can you please make room for Mr. Peter Wagenius? Ms. Waff, please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Senator Frenz. Chair Frenz, the Chair Klein, and the members of this committee. My name is Sarah Wolf, and I'm the Strategic Policy Director with Minnesota Interfaith Power and Light, where we work with faith communities across the state to promote climate solutions that are equitable and effective. I'd like to thank this committee for your work on our clean energy transition as we find ourselves daily confronting ever more serious climate situations. MNIPL appreciates the opportunity to express a few concerns about provisions in this bill. First, we're concerned about the weakening of net metering that impacts the financial benefit of that law for people who live or run businesses outside of investor-owned utility areas. Secondly, regarding community solar gardens, We've appreciated the way, as you noted earlier, Community Solar Garden Program has rooted solar in communities across the state, and also the way it enables anyone and also those who have lower incomes to participate in this solar transition. And especially as utilities everywhere are seeing ever-expanding electricity use, we would like to see this community-focused program continue and oppose the sunset provision. Thank you to the committee for recognizing the need to discuss the ways hyperscale data centers will impact the energy landscape. And we hope this conversation will be broadened to fully consider the kind of neighbors data centers will be, whether they will pay sales tax, whether they will be protective of our land, water, and air, and the transparency they embody as they propose projects in communities. We are concerned about allowing B100 to be considered carbon-free when it emits carbon when it is used. And further, the production of biofuel involves the emitting of nitrous oxide in the use of fertilizers and the fertilizer's production. And that nitrous oxide is a super pollutant with a greenhouse warming potential 273 times that of CO2 for a 100-year timescale, meaning nitrous oxide emitted today remains in the atmosphere for more than 100 years on average. So we're concerned about diverting our time, energy, and resources in that way. Regarding hydro, I know you mentioned that. I really appreciate Senator Friend's opening the lane for discussion on that. And I just say that it represents a differing set of perspectives between industry, the utilities that would like to count that hydro, and communities, particularly indigenous communities, who have wanted to protect their land and natural resources. Those hydro scale, those hydropower facilities have an impact on the environment and the rivers and those places, which I could speak more about if there's time. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Wolf. And as you clear the table, can Mr. Bobby King please come forward? Mr. Wagenius, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Peter Wagenius, Legislative Director of First Sierra Club. Minnesotans can only rely on big tech to do what is required by law. If drinking water is polluted downstream of hyperscale data centers in Minnesota, that won't matter to tech bros in Silicon Valley. If farmers in Minnesota can't use the water they needed for irrigating their crops because of water pollution or water depletion from data centers, it won't affect the stock price of Amazon, Google, or Microsoft. If our energy grid or our ability to reduce our emissions is damaged, Jeff Bezos and other tech billionaires aren't going to lose power at their mansions. They won't lose sleep over any of this, because not only will they have already built their projects, they will have already cashed their subsidy checks from Minnesota taxpayers. Some will claim we can't require these tech giants to fully protect our environment because it would be an imposition on businesses operating in the free market. This is nonsense. There is no free market here. The tech companies are getting massive taxpayer subsidies, and unless the legislature takes action this year on the uncapped subsidy, Minnesota taxpayers will just pay more and more. We know that this year, education, healthcare, and other services will be cut $100 million deeper than needed to keep the gravy train of corporate welfare moving. Voters will not forget this. Americans of both parties and of no party are angry at seeing their country handed over to the billionaires of big tech. Americans' anger is visible in Wisconsin and in town halls across the country. This anger is growing. If Minnesotans are to be protected from threats of data centers, it will only be because legislators insisted on it, and Senate File 2393 doesn't do that. Sierra Club also opposes weakening net metering, repealing community solar gardens, and especially undermining the 100% carbon-free law. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Wagenius. Can you make room for Mr. Charlie Ryback, please? Mr. King, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself.
Mr. Chair, committee, my name is Bobby King. I'm the Minnesota State Director for Solar United Neighbors. We help folks around Minnesota go solar through education and coordinating group buys. Wanted to speak in opposition to the provisions in the bill that severely weaken net metering in rural electric cooperative and municipal territory. First, I just wanted to speak about the cost shift argument. I don't believe really there is a cost shift, and there certainly hasn't been demonstrated in testimony specifically what the cost shift is. The way net metering works is if I'm producing more solar than I currently can use on site at my home or my small business or my farm, it goes onto the grid, my neighbor uses it, but the rural electric co-op or the muni charges them for that electricity that they didn't provide. So I get a credit equal to that rate. So it's a wash. It's just as if they used less power that day. And it's especially not a cost shift at the very low level of penetration we have in Minnesota now of small-scale solar. It's below 1% in 152 of the 168 munis in rural electric co-op territories. Lastly, on the cost shift issue, there is a mechanism for rural electric co-ops to recover any costs if they think there is one through a solar access fee. They're already empowered to do that, and many of them do it. The other thing about the bill, if it were to move forward, got concerns about how the credit works. When you do get a credit, you lose it at the end of the year, or you're paid a substantially less amount, avoided cost at the end of the year, 2 or 3 cents a kilowatt hour. So the credits you generate in the summer, you may not be able to apply to the January, February, March months. So in order to offset your yearly usage, which many folks have said we want to be able to allow still, there needs to be a tweak there. Also, the grandfathering clause, we'd like to see that move to 2026 if this does move forward, especially for farms and real small businesses. This can be a long timeline on this project, especially if they're trying to access the Rural Energy for America program dollars of REAP grants. And then lastly, I think it's fair to say we've achieved 100% uncertainty at the federal level. And solar is a growing industry, and I think now we need to keep things on a steady course at the state level if we can, because we're facing some real headwinds with the solar tax credit possibly expiring and the tariffs. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. King. Can you make room for Patty O'Keefe, please? Mr. Ryback, welcome. Introduce yourself and go ahead.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair and the committee. Appreciate you having all of us. My name is Charlie Ryback. I'm with Cooperative Energy Futures. We are a renewable energy cooperative that seeks to make clean energy accessible to all, which is why we got into community solar in the first place. I was up here a couple weeks ago talking about this. Two things I really want to focus on today. One is the new program, the LMI program, is working, and I would ask that you allow it to keep working. A specific provision that I want to call out is the protections offered for low-income Minnesotans in that program and the benefits offered to low-income participants in the program. There are benefits for low-income participants and there are protections for non-participants. If you get rid of this program, low-income Minnesotans as a whole will see their bills go up. Secondly, I'd like to focus a little bit on transmission distribution. When we try to build projects in places where there are constraints in the distribution grid, we developers have to pay the upgrade costs. If you get rid of this program, more strain will be put on the transmission grid. It's already pretty hard to build transmission. It's expensive to build transmission. There will be bigger strain put on that, and we will lose the benefits provided by developers who have to pay those upgrade costs to the distribution grid. This program is one of the only options for helping renters and helping people in rural manufactured home parks access benefits to the clean energy economy. We have both of those folks, many of them, as our members in the system. If you get rid of this, there will be a shift in the solar industry towards trying to serve high-income folks, people that can pay, and fewer abilities to help people who may not own their homes or who may have homes that aren't very energy efficient and things of that nature. I'd like to echo that since I was up here a couple weeks ago, the federal government has created a tremendous amount of uncertainty for us in our business, trying to figure out how much we're going to have to pay for projects, where we're going to source materials, whether we can loan money at a decent rate has become substantially more difficult. This bill to try to harm what is really a fantastic growing industry in Minnesota, I don't think it's a good idea. I think it's especially a bad idea right now. Please don't harm this program that provides benefits for so many people. Thank you so much for the time.
Thank you, Mr. Ryback. And as you clear the table, can Logan O'Grady come back again? Ms. O'Keefe, please introduce yourself and proceed.
Hello, members of committee and chair friends. My name is Patty O'Keefe. I'm the Midwest Regional Director with Vote Solar. We are beyond disappointed with this bill. We're concerned that it does not position Minnesota as a clean energy leader, but rather confuses the market and undermines public trust by jeopardizing programs that just went into effect and are just beginning to deliver on their promise. We don't think the current cost calculations that make up the public-facing oppositional narrative to community solar are fair. It leaves out key information about grid benefits like avoided transmission costs and reductions in peak demand. The Department of Commerce study evaluated the costs and benefits and project $3 billion in net benefits from community solar. I've said this before, but I'll say it again. Utilities routinely socialize the costs of power plants, transmission lines, and grid upgrades, whether or not every customer directly benefits. Yet when it comes to community solar, the same cost-sharing principles are framed as a problem. And the key difference is community solar introduces competition, challenging utility monopolies and reining in their ability to earn a rate of return on new infrastructure investments. Community solar also brings competition to an energy market increasingly dominated by monopolies, investor-owned utilities. These are entities that are fiduciarily obligated to maximize shareholder profit. Minnesotans care about this. 25,000 people were outside the Capitol on Saturday with one of the central themes being resistance to multi-billion dollar corporations running our economy and our government. Getting rid of community solar points us further in that direction. I think it is that simple. One of the most frustrating things about this is that we're proposing to sunset the program before the reforms have even had a chance to take hold. The bill passed recently updates our program to better serve low-income subscribers and expands access for renters and families who've been effectively shut out of clean energy until now. We also take issue with the net metering reforms that would hinder solar development in rural Minnesota and take away a crucial energy savings tool. We're discouraged about the conversation around data centers and how a lot of the negotiation has prioritized negotiating with Amazon and multi-billion dollar corporations instead of environmental advocates and people directly from the communities who are being affected. There are a number of other things too, but I'll leave it there. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. O'Keefe. And as you clear, can Kathleen Schuler please come forward? Mr. O'Grady, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, Logan O'Grady, Executive Director of the Minnesota Solar Energy Industries Association. I'm here on behalf of our over 170 members who would be negatively impacted by this legislation. I think our concerns with the bill, our specific concerns, have been well outlined in previous hearings as well as the letters and testimony that you're receiving today. So I'm going to keep my comments more to a higher level philosophical disagreement, and I'll end with an anecdote from my work in the last week. So I've heard many times in this committee that we can have friendly disagreements, and I hope that my disagreement with this legislation is viewed as just that, friendly and healthy. There's a philosophical question playing out here, and that's always a difficult one to handle because the question is, how should we advance and deploy clean energy in the state of Minnesota? MNCEA has always believed that an all of the above, or as our friends at Commerce say, a yes and approach is the best way to advance and deploy clean energy. And MNCEA has particularly focused through our strategic vision on the deployment of distributed energy resources. But I think the more important question is, why are we focusing there? We are focusing there because distributed energy resources are quicker to deploy, they're more efficient because they're closer to their users, they're more secure because they're not centralized, they're more reliable and resilient because you're spacing them throughout communities in the state of Minnesota, and they're more flexible, they're easier to turn on. But I think perhaps most important is they are more equitable. DERs invite all Minnesotans from every community to participate in the clean energy transition. And asking them not to participate would be similar to asking Minnesotans to forgo their cell phones and stick with their landlines or ignore Wi-Fi and keep their dial-up internet. It's outdated. So don't make this transition harder and more expensive. I would reconsider these provisions in this bill. So to close, I just want to tell a quick anecdote from my job as a trade group representative over the last week. I received a call on Friday from a developer who has 25 projects at various stages within the development process. So that's years of work and millions of dollars already in investment. They asked me, should we pull the plug on those projects? That would be a tremendous loss for our state. Over 21 megawatts of clean, dispatchable energy ready to go, hundreds of local jobs, millions in economic development and in local tax revenues. I do not want to tell that developer to pull the plug. So I want to end by quick thanking everyone here for listening and for Senator Frentz for continuing to meet with us even though we have this friendly disagreement.
Thank you, Mr. O'Grady. And as you clear, can Sarah Moradian please come forward? Ms. Schuler, please introduce yourself and go ahead.
Good afternoon, Chair Klein, Chair Friends, and committee members. My name is Kathleen Schuler. I'm State Policy Director with Health Professionals for Healthy Climate. I'm here to testify against SF 2393 in its current form. We oppose the sunsetting of Minnesota's Community Solar Garden Program. Community solar gardens allow Minnesotans who don't have the ability or resources to install rooftop solar to benefit from renewable and carbon-free energy with lower utility bills and the opportunity to participate in Minnesota's clean energy economy. Minnesota's Community Solar Garden Program is critical to promoting climate equity and public health. Excuse me. HPHC opposes changes to Minnesota's carbon-free statute, including removal of limits on hydroelectric power capacity, allowing new hydroelectric projects. Large hydroelectric dams destroy precious river environments that support biodiverse ecosystems, including fisheries, threatening food sources and livelihoods for local communities. The building of hydropower plants generates methane and carbon dioxide. The increasing incidence of extreme weather events makes hydroelectric power generation risky due to drought and dam failure. Minnesota's current hydropower capacity contributes to greenhouse gas reductions, but we should not be investing in new hydroelectric power infrastructure. We also oppose the inclusion of biodiesel as a carbon-free technology. Biodiesel emits carbon and is therefore not carbon-free. First-generation feedstocks such as corn, canola, soy, and palm oil generate greenhouse gases from energy consumption, transportation, pesticide and fertilizer use, as well as land use changes. Additional impacts include high water use and air, soil, and water pollution. Biodiesel should not be defined in statute as a carbon-free technology. Thank you for the opportunity to comment.
Thank you, Ms. Schuler. And as you clear the table, can Margaret Schern-Hendricks please come forward? Ms. Moretti, and please introduce yourself and go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Klein, Chair Friends, committee members. My name is Sarah Moradian, and I'm the Government Relations and Policy Director for CURE. I'm here today to testify in strong opposition to Senate File 2393 as amended. I've testified before this committee on several of the bills that now appear in this omnibus, so I won't reiterate all of those concerns. Would just direct you to our written testimony for a detailed explanation of our opposition, especially on Article 3, Sections 2 through 5, 7 through 9, 11, and 18 through 20, and some suggestions for much-needed improvements. As currently written, this bill will eliminate essential means to increase distributed generation, provide opportunities for public participation in energy generation and low-cost energy resources. At the same time, it will double down on our existing model of energy generation, distribution, and ownership, walk back on our state's carbon-free, not lower carbon, goals, and provide industry-specific exemptions to the laws intended to protect our communities, energy systems, and environment. We understand the desire to welcome businesses to our state and make it an appealing place to operate. Of course, many businesses can and do generate significant benefits for our communities and economy. But those who want to do right by the communities and ecosystems in which they operate and have ample means to do so will have no qualms about following the laws as they exist. And as we've heard from many previous testifiers, weakening net metering and eliminating the CSG program will harm existing small businesses. CURE cannot support Senate File 2393 as amended, but we welcome the opportunity to improve the bill so that it reflects the interests of your constituents, not just the interests of those with the time, resources, and lobbyists to meet with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Moradian. And can you please make room for Chris Dufferin? Ms. Schern-Hendricks, please introduce yourself and go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good afternoon, members. My name is Margaret Cherney-Hendrick, and I am the Deputy Chief Executive Officer of Fresh Energy. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. First, I want to thank you and the committee for the inclusion of $2 million for geothermal planning grants. We've heard clearly from local government leaders that initial planning and feasibility work is a barrier, and continuing to fund this existing program will help spur projects and grow jobs in the geothermal industry in Minnesota. Second, in our written testimony earlier this year, we made the case for a comprehensive state policy approach on data centers. However, the A3 amendment only addresses the regulation of backup generation for data centers. Fresh Energy believes concerns like this must be addressed in the context of many real public policy needs presented by their expansion in Minnesota. including consumer protections, as well as the realization of broader community and statewide benefits. Finally, we oppose the provision to specifically define electricity generated from biodiesel as carbon-free, whether or not it actually is. There are several problems with this. First, the carbon-free standard is technically neutral, with no specific inclusion of any technology, not wind, not solar, not hydropower, or geothermal. From a policy perspective, this means that all technologies must be evaluated individually, an approach that we believe is the most fair and rigorous. Second, biodiesel, or B100, is objectively not fully carbon-free. You don't have to take my word for it, though. The Clean Fuels Alliance, which is the national trade association for the biodiesel industry, claims that biodiesel can reduce emissions by more than 70% on average, not 100%. Numbers that are also backed up by the U.S. Department of Energy. If the industry's own trade association doesn't claim their fuel is carbon-free, neither should the state of Minnesota. Fresh Energy looks forward to continuing to work closely with members of this committee and other stakeholders. And again, we appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hendricks. Mr. Dufferin, please introduce yourself and go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Chris Dufferin. I'm president of Center for Energy and Environment. CEE is an organization of nearly 250 engineers, building analysts, technicians, and other professionals, all helping Minnesotans save energy and money through cost-effective energy efficiency solutions. And I'll limit my concerns here or my comments to the data center portion of the bill that we have been engaged in. CEE supports large data centers in Minnesota. We think we're better off with data centers locating in a state dedicated to clean energy, buying electrons from utilities that are going to build the clean energy infrastructure that we all need. If done correctly, data centers could help us all benefit. At the same time, we need to acknowledge the challenges our system could face and as we add massive loads to our energy system. As data centers come online, growing efficiency, demand response, and strategic electrification throughout the electric system to eliminate waste in the system and reduce system peaks will be critical. While good systems are in place through ECO to help most customers make smart decisions and investments, those least able to afford upfront costs need more support. So over the past couple of months, we have been engaging the data centers on ways they could help Minnesotans make those investments. Our hope is that if you make this decision to ease the entry of these enormous energy users, all of whom likely qualify for ECO exemption, that you consider a modest investment by these same companies in income-eligible weatherization. According to our analysis, approximately 290,000 households with incomes of 80% area median income or less require weatherization, which at current pace will take approximately 130 years to complete. So we continue to roll up our sleeves on this bill to help seek some support from data centers on the concept and from Chair Frentz on our approach. But the current bill, which eases regulatory requirements for some of the largest companies in the world, lacks an offsetting public interest benefit. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the time.
Thank you, Mr. Dufferin. That's the end of our listed testifiers. If there are members of the public who feel their ideas were not fully represented, please come forward now and we'll give you a minute or two.
Okay, $3, got it.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Canis. Please introduce yourself and go ahead.
Thank you so much, Chair Frentz and members of the committee. I'm Vita Konitz. I'm a volunteer here today representing the DFL Environmental Caucus. We have over 1,600 members and a 21-member board from all over the state of Minnesota who want me to be here today to speak on behalf of really working towards our 2040 carbon-free goals and sticking with it. And I think that this bill, Senate File 2393, respectfully falls short of that goal in many areas. At a time when we should be accelerating the transition to a clean, renewable energy future from solar and other forms, this bill curtails that progress by, first of all, ending the community solar garden grants in 2028, by making changes to net metering that reduce the value for homeowners and farmers, by granting data centers an exemption for diesel engines from certificate of need from the PUC, minimizing their environmental review with an AUAR rather than the more complete Minnesota Environmental Policy Act. Also by defining biodiesel fuel, B100, as carbon-free for peaker power plants, when we know it is not carbon-free, as others have said, and have harmful pollutants like nitrous oxides that affect our health and carbon emissions. Also, for hydropower to be an eligible technology at any capacity, so that we're starting to, perhaps this is about importing hydropower from Canada and having that count towards our renewable energy goals, when I think we really want to be developing renewable energy here in Minnesota locally to benefit all of us. Please consider removing these harmful items from Senate File 2393. We really appreciate your work and ask you to remember the urgency of the climate crisis and the current and future citizens of Minnesota who will be greatly impacted by this bill. Thank you.
Thanks, Peter.
Thank you, Ms. Kainitz. Senator Frentz, would you like me to go to member questions and comments?
Yeah, I have a few closing remarks, but maybe member questions or comments first would be appropriate, Mr. Chair.
Members, any? Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Frentz, of the general fund monies that are being allocated for the Department of Commerce or the PUC, in light of the impending budget problems of the state of Minnesota, are any of those funds designated for additional state employees?
Senator Frentz.
Thank you, Chair Klein. Thank you, Senator Weber. We have additional PUC employees to help. I forget the number. We can maybe ask Mr. Mueller, but those are ratepayer reimbursed. So the answer to your question is yes. I don't know if I can give you the number.
Counsel.
Mr. Mueller might.
Mr. Chair, the PUC increases that were in the governor's budget, I'm just going by the FTEs that were in the governor's information. The natural gas utility planning was three FTEs, and the technology staffing was five FTEs, and the tribal liaison was one. And so, I don't know if the PUC has any change from that, but that was included in the governor's budget information.
Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so, and all those are can be charged for? Is that what you're saying, Senator Frentz?
Senator Frentz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Weber. Yes, that would be brought to the ratepayers. And we did review it after the governor made his proposal, and I'm including it. I think that's a better approach than the alternative, which is not to include it, but like everything else, open to discussion as we go forward.
Thank you.
Other questions or comments from the committee? Senator Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the walk through this bill. There are some good pieces that are in here. There's still some questionable items on some of the spending that we've seen and had testified in here. There's also some pretty glaring omissions that were left out of the bill. And I'm sure we'll talk about some of them this week. The one I did want to ask you about, Senator Frentz, is you picked up several pieces around the wood products and left out Senator Farnsworth's bill that one of the testifiers mentioned. Wondering if you had an explanation or reasoning for that, as we saw like the Pratt bill included, some of the others in there. Wanted to hear your thoughts on that.
Senator Frentz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Matthews. We did have some extensive discussions. I actually have Farnsworth right here. I would understand Senator Farnsworth and the rest saying, how come it's not included? I just felt it fell on the other side of the line in trying to serve these two masters, affordability and clean. And so we would not be shocked to see an amendment proposed to the bill. Each member will have to vote the way they think makes the most sense, but it was my decision to leave it out at this point, given all the other things that were included and our hope for a little bit of peace in the valley, which obviously we have achieved.
Senator Matthews. Senator Gruenhagen.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, thanks for the presentation, Nick. And I actually do like the number of provisions in the bill, okay? I do have a few concerns, but I would just say that I think you're taking a step in a rational direction. And the You know, there's just an article that came out. Major backer of green energy admits solar and wind alone can't reliably keep the lights on. And it's Larry Fink of the BlackRock. He invests about $300 billion into energy companies. And he is really comes down strong on the new technology for nuclear. Now, to what degree did you address nuclear in this bill? I didn't see very much.
Senator Ferentz on nuclear.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Gruenhagen. As you know, we heard bills that would lift the nuclear moratorium. I did not include them when we failed to achieve the support for either Prairie Island Community or Xcel Energy, the only entity that operates nuclear. And it was my pledge to this committee and to the public that without the support of Prairie Island and Xcel, that I would not support any change to the nuclear law in Minnesota. And having given them a chance to meet with their community members and do some fairly extensive conversation, they informed us that they weren't ready to support any change, and that's why the bill reflects none of those.
Sir Gruenhagen?
Well, thank you. Thanks for that response, but I just wish we'd include something. Even Larry Fink comes across with this quote. Today's nuclear isn't the old model of massive plants with the ominous cooling towers, he continued. Smaller nuclear reactors are everything old nuclear wasn't. Cheaper to build, safer to run, and you can build them anywhere, and they provide base load electricity. I would also add that with the data centers coming, even Bill Gates is refurbishing Three Mile Island now to provide base load electricity. One last comment for everyone to consider. You know, a lot of this so-called clean energy is gonna be an environmental disaster. Look up on the internet, graveyards for windmills. I mean, to clean this stuff up one day after, and I know how this is gonna work. The corporation individuals who are draining money out of this, a lot of them, some of them even foreign, once that has to be cleaned up, they're gonna declare bankruptcy, they're gonna be gone, and we're gonna get stuck cleaning the mess up, okay? They take too much farmland, they're not efficient, and in fact, they're anti-environmentalists in many cases. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Gruenhagen. Senator Frentz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Hope you don't mind me responding to Senator Gruenhagen. First of all, thanks for the thoughtful commentary. I'd raise the same question about the dealing with nuclear waste. We do not have a good way to put nuclear waste somewhere, and yet we continue to allow our Minnesotans to benefit from the energy generated. So we do make some sacrifices in that policy as well as the one you're talking about. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Frentz. Appreciated the opportunity to glance over the bill over the weekend, and you and I, of course, spoke yesterday afternoon. So just reflecting on that conversation, I continue to have concerns around the provisions, which we heard about from a few folks today at the table on data centers, net metering, the community solar gardens, sunset, you know, sweeping in of the large hydro. You know, I think we have some determination going on at the PUC on the B100, and of course on securitization, my good friend Senator Zhang's bill. I just want to make sure that we're buttoning that up in the ways that are of concern to me. So I appreciate your willingness and openness to have those conversations. I look forward to having more conversation over the next day and a half, and look forward to our hearing on Wednesday.
Senator Frentz, closing comments.
Yeah, thank you, members. Thank you, Senator Dibble. I did appreciate your time this weekend, and I think every provision in this bill is open for discussion between now and final passage. Senator Gruenhagen perhaps wants to go again.
Senator Gruenhagen.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I just wanted to respond to your comment about nuclear waste. Again, you do your research on that, and right now approximately 96% of spent nuclear fuel can be recycled with the, and then it goes on, et cetera. So we're reaching the point of almost 100%. There's small nuclear things. This is the future. It's going to provide base load, inexpensive, penny cheap electricity, and yet we're turning our back on that in here in Minnesota. I think that's a disappointment. But I still like some of the provisions in your bill.
Closing comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. A few of the things that were brought up here I want to touch on. First of all, members, the question is not ideological purity on the 100%. The question is what causes the least emissions to go into our air? We have alternatives. For those members of the public who testified about B100, I understand nitrous oxide is emitted. I also know how much is emitted when they run those backup generators with regular diesel, which is the alternative. It's higher. And so one of the things we have to ask ourselves is, if that is really your goal, clean energy by 2040, and you want to reduce carbon emissions because of climate change, which costs us plenty, by the way, even if all we care about is money, I think you want to look at the B100 provision. I point out for the members of this committee who may have already known this, but B100 received a yes vote bipartisanly 2 years ago. Likewise, a revision of the Community Solar Garden Program was a part of the Senate omnibus bill as we went into conference committee in 2023. I have remained open to discussions about how to change the new program, the LMI program, to something that doesn't impact non-subscribers. As I sit here, I have not received a proposal of any type to do anything other than to continue with it. And I would just say to my friends who are suggesting that the cost impact is not important, I would say, how are we supposed to get the public to go with us if we tell them that we're purchasing a type of energy at a way that is not the most efficient? We have utility-grade solar. We have solar that's available on the marketplace. We can buy it at a certain price, and we know it. And how do we know it? Because we can see the fuel clause as reported by Xcel Energy each year. What it told us last year about the Community Solar Garden Program is that ratepayers, that's the $1.4 million, paid $262 million. That's added to each and every person's bill, and that includes low and middle income. Those charges represent about 29% of the fuel clause. The solar energy purchase represents about 4.5% of the energy procured. So it's obvious that we can buy it more efficiently. And as I've said to this committee many times, Mr. Chair, the lower the cost, the more we can buy. Our energy demand is going to double in the next 25 years. I think that's widely accepted. We better ask ourselves how to build more faster. I do respect the idea that we want Minnesotans to be involved. Community solar allows people to sign up. Does it have to be a program that has an impact on the non-subscribing ratepayers? This bill, and my best judgment of that, says no, it does not. I would point out for those of the public that are asking this, that this committee, in conference committee, approved an additional $50 million for the solar rewards program last year, so that the suggestion that this committee is not open to solar seems to run into a little bit of historical objection. With that, Mr. Chair, I'd ask that you lay the bill over. Let's have some discussions for the next 48 hours. Come back here on Wednesday, mark it up, and send it off.
Thank you, Senator Frenz. Senate File 2393, as amended, is laid over. Committee is adjourned.